You've finally broken loose from work. Three friends, one tea time, and then the text. Honey, there's water in the basement. Not exactly how you pictured your Saturday. That's when you call us, Cincinnati Insurance. We always answer the call, because real protection means showing up, even when things are in the rough. Cincinnati Insurance. Let us make your bad day better. Find an agent at CINFIN.com.
Hiring isn't just about finding someone willing to take the job. You need the right person with the right background who can move your business forward. If you want candidates who truly match what you're looking for, trust Indeed Sponsored Jobs. With Indeed Sponsored Jobs, your post stands out to quality candidates who actually fit the role. According to Indeed data, 90% are more likely to be hired and trusted by 1.6 million companies. Spend more time interviewing candidates who check all your boxes. Less stress, less time, more results. Now with Indeed Sponsored Jobs. And listeners of this show will get a $75 sponsored job credit to help your job get the premium status it deserves at Indeed.com/podcast13. Just go to Indeed.com/podcast13 right now and support our show by saying you heard about Indeed on this podcast. Indeed.com/podcast13. Terms and conditions apply. Hiring? Do it the right way with Indeed.
God will take care of it. Yeah. God will take care of it in his own way.
Do you go to church much, Steve?
The last time I went to Mass was maybe my nephew's christening last year. I used to go to Mass when I was younger a lot more, but
sure.
You know what it's like. I'm not going to lie to you, Father, you know what I mean?
I know.
Every night I still count my blessings. When I wake up in the morning, I still count my blessings, still count all the things I'm grateful for. And
good lad.
Do you get much younger ones coming into the chapel now, do you? Or just older crowd?
It depends where you go. There are some younger ones coming back. But, for example, I was in Lourdes last month. The amount of young people was amazing. They've done your
good
heart good.
See, yeah.
Brilliant, you know. Young people there helping the sick, you know, pushing wheelchairs and looking after the sick when they're there. You know, it's really great to see it. And somebody was telling me they were in Rome there recently. And again, thousands and thousands of young people, you know, teenagers.
Have you ever been to Rome yourself?
A couple of times, yeah.
Rome's is that a Catholic place? Is that where the Pope's from, though?
Yeah.
The
Vatican's there. Oh. Yeah, the Pope's there.
Have you met the Pope?
Yes.
You have?
I met him in 2018 when he came to Ireland. I was one of the group of victims that was picked to meet with him. And we met him in Dublin. We had 2 hours with him. And he listened to our stories, you know. It was incredible. Like, it was all surreal almost, you know. Like, we were all in this room in a circle. There was about 7 or 8 of us, I think. And the next minute, there's the Pope standing there, you know. And
unbelievable.
It was,
this might sound stupid. Does the Pope speak English? No, he
hasn't much English. He's Spanish speaking. He's from Argentina. And of course, he speaks Italian fluently. But he had an interpreter with him, a young priest who translated what we were saying and translated what he was saying, you know.
Out of everyone in the whole world, is that who you would want to meet first? Or out of every celebrity, Father, out of everyone? No? Who would be your hero you would love to meet?
Don't know, to be honest.
Nah? No
like
favourite singers?
Any inspirations growing up?
The parish priest when I was a kid,
he was
a great priest. I wanted to be a priest from when I was no age. When I was capable of wanting to be anything and knew it was going to grow up to be something, I wanted to be a priest. And the priests that I knew as a kid were the real deal. Like, my unfortunate experiences would come later. But as a kid, there was only one dodgy priest that I remember. He gave me the creeps a bit. He was an American. An American accent. He was only visiting our parish in White Abbey, but I was about 14 at the time, and he was giving me these big hugs and holding me sort of saying, "Hey, you're so cute," and all this, and freaked me out.
How old were you?
I was about 14.
14 years old?
Yeah, and that was the only strange, and he didn't do anything else, like, you know, and but he wanted to take me out on day trips, and I always said, I would always make an excuse not to go.
As you would.
Yeah, as you would. Most of the priests that I knew were all good men and were everything that a priest should be. And I wanted to be a priest like the parish priest we had at the time, who was a really good man, you know, and kind, a kind man, you know, and made time for everybody, you know. That's what it's all about.
So, Father, now there mustn't be much priest coming through, is there?
There isn't here, but there is in other parts of the world, you know. But it's been like this before. It's happened before in history. I mean, there was a time in the 18th century in Italy when the church had almost died out. Like, churches in villages were abandoned.
Yeah.
The roofs were falling in because nobody kept them up or went to Mass or anything. And then there was a great saint who was raised up at the time called St. Alphonsus. He founded, no, the Redemptorists down in Clonard. He founded that order. They're called Redemptorists, Congregation of the Most Holy Redeemer. And they get called Redemptorists.
Is that the monastery you're talking about? Yeah.
And he started up mission campaigns and bringing people back to the faith, preaching. He went into the town squares and preached. People all started to come back to Mass and the sacraments, you know. So I wouldn't, it's disheartening when you're looking down at a church, you know, which should be full, and it's not. You know, I think there's lots of signs of hope.
Yeah.
Do you think a lot of people are just like losing their faith or not believing, or maybe as the generations are just going on, less people are occurring, or
a lot of people's interest and their attention spans are shorter now.
There's a whole lot of reasons for it, you know.
And you're sitting there, you're paying attention for 45 minutes straight, you know what I mean?
Yeah,
like,
yeah.
The kids,
yeah.
It doesn't seem like people really have that attention span nowadays.
That's understandable because of everything, social media and all that, like all things now, like short TikTok things and stuff, and your attention span is like a couple of seconds nearly, you know?
Whereas when you're in Mass, you're listening to the priest speaking and you're listening to stories and you're using your imagination sometimes to sort of listen, and that element's kind of talking away.
And some of them are hard to listen to, you know?
That's it. Don't get me wrong, there's some stories from, like, the stories are that I've been, did you ever hear about the miracle of Fatima?
Oh,
Fatima, and, like, that's interesting to me.
I was in Fatima. I was there in August.
Did you go to Fatima? It's in Portugal, is it?
Yep, it's in Portugal. It's about 2 hours from Lisbon. We were in Lourdes, and then for four days, and then 4 days in Fatima. Our Lady appeared there, Gavin, in, I think it was 1917, and she appeared to three children, wee small children. The oldest was 11, then there was a wee boy of 7 and a wee girl of 8. I think that was it, or the other way around, I'm not sure. The two young children are Saint Francisco and Saint Jacinta. Lucia was the other girl, the older girl, and she only died not that long ago, really, you know. And she lived like well into her, she was nearly 100 when she died, you know. But Our Lady appeared to them with a message to call on the world to conversion and warning the world, you know, that it was on the wrong road totally, and, you know, and that, and she predicted the war was just coming to an end, the First World War. She predicted the Second World War. She predicted it. They did. So it's a lovely place, beautiful place, a very prayerful place, very peaceful place. And Lourdes is something similar. Our Lady's message at Lourdes was also conversion, pray for the conversion of sinners to Bernadette. And just a few, 2 weeks ago, the relics of St. Bernadette were here, down in St. Mary's in Chapel Lane, and you were talking there about numbers and thing. Bunged thousands of people, filed past 2 days, Tuesday and Wednesday of the week before last, and thousands of people, and lots of young people. It was amazing. And a lot of young people were there helping and stewarding and stuff like that. And it was absolutely amazing. Yeah, and St. Mary's, no, Chapel Lane, St. Mary's, down there in the city centre. What do you call that pub, that bar? Kelly's Cellars.
Yes, I know what you're on about now.
Mourne Seafood. St. Mary's is the church right beside there. And it's a big church, and it was packed. There was Mass at 7 in the morning, 1 o'clock, and 7 in the evening. I was there hearing confessions for hours on the 2 days. Jam-packed, the church, and people were coming constantly, even all during the night, Tuesday night. They kept the church open all night.
So you'd just be surprised, so, amen, the people that show off for certain events. There you go.
That's it. I mean, I think there's a lot of faith out there. There is.
Yeah.
And there's a lot of hope, and there's an awful lot of good people. You know, I'm here now. I was here 8 years, John, on Saturday. 28th of October was my first time I said Mass here as parish priest of Corpus Christi. And I love this place. Yeah. I absolutely love it. I've loved all the parishes I've been in.
What was the first parish you started in?
Poleglass.
On Poleglass.
I loved it.
Okay.
It's just the people you love.
The people and the area. I mean, I loved Poleglass. Poleglass back then was just getting started. Like, the estates had only been opened a couple of years, and I was sent there in 1989. But it was buzzing. But there was three of us, three priests. There was a priest called Father Paddy McWilliams. Paddy Mac is what he got called. And he was a legend, a complete legend, you know. He built that whole area. You know the dairy farm stand? Yeah. That was his initiative. He went after the government and pleading, and he badgered them until they agreed, because there was no shops up there. Yeah. You relied on vans coming around, a van shop. That's the only way you could get
the van shops. Yeah. You don't get them.
Need many
them.
Years ago would that have been?
Right, that's 35 years ago.
Is it?
Since I went there. I was there from 89 to 94.
Father, what age are you?
I'm 61.
You see what I love about you, Father? I am. I have you on Facebook, and what I love, and you don't see much the other priests doing. You're out, you do your boxing, you're out training, you're out, you have like a personality outside of the church, which is good to see, because see, when I think of a lot of priests, I think of like an old, like I think of Father Danny. Can you remember Father Danny? Of course, I think of like older priests who don't really, you wouldn't see them outside the church.
No.
Where it's good to see.
But
you
Father Danny was a great man.
I know he was. Yeah. Father Danny just lives, for anyone watching, he was our parish priest.
He died, you know.
He lived like, down the street. 10 doors down.
Yeah, he lived just beside the wee nursery school and the chapel, the Annunciation, and Matt Talbot Nursery School, and he lived in that end house. And we got a call one morning, and they hadn't turned up for Mass at 10 o'clock. That wouldn't have been like him, you know. And we knew there was something wrong. So we got his niece, who had a key to his house, and we went in, and he was unconscious. He was just sitting in a chair, and he was all dressed for action. Like he had, that's the way I want to go. I want to die with my boots on.
See,
I want to die with my boots on. No, I don't want to retire. No way.
Father, are you scared of dying?
Everybody is, I think, yeah. Our Lord was scared of dying, you know. He said, Father, let this cup pass me by, but nevertheless, not my will. He sweated blood. That's a medical condition. I think it's called hemohidrosis or something like that, where your capillaries around your pores, if you're in extreme stress, and it's very rare, they burst and blood comes out of your pores. It's an actual medical, very rare medical condition. So he sweated blood at the thoughts of dying, you know. I think we are all, it's the unknown.
It's only human nature.
It's only human nature. It's the unknown. You don't know. I mean, we trust and we have faith and we believe in God, and, you know, we know that death's not the end. We that's what our faith tells us. Death is not the end. Only the body that dies. I say that at funerals, at a funeral this morning. Only the body dies. Who that person is not dead. That person goes on. That person has a soul. That person has a spirit. When you look at a person lying in a coffin, you know that looks like the person, but there's something gone. That life is gone. Well, where does life go? It has to go somewhere. It just doesn't die, snuffed out. You know, when you think about it, we're more than a body.
It's conscious, aren't it?
Yeah, like, your body is what, it's like a tent that you live in. Yeah. It's a temporary home.
You've got a voice in your head, but only you can hear that voice. But how can you hear that? Do you know what I mean? Like, it doesn't, if I go to say a word in my head now, you just can't hear it, but I can hear it.
Yeah, exactly. And then you speak it.
To be honest.
That's your spirit.
Yeah, is it? Yes. Exactly.
See, to be honest, Father, see, for a lot, so I'm 30 now, as the years are going on, like, I wasn't a believer for a lot of years, but now as I'm getting older, I'm starting to see a different side.
Yes.
Now I'm hitting my 30s, now you're starting to go, fuck, how many years have I got left? Then you start thinking. I see from your kid to, I say, about 25, you don't have these thoughts.
No.
It's when you start having kids, and you're getting older, and you start to realise, these years are flying in here. So then your mind does start to think.
It seems like yesterday, since I was 20, it seems like a blink ago. And I'm now 61, as I said there. It's a bit scary, to be honest.
Fucking right, isn't
it? Look, it all went so fast. And I loved it. I, as I said, Pole Glass, Turf Lodge then was after Pole Glass, and then over to the North Belfast, over to the Old Park near Ardoyne, as they call it, the Bone, Sacred Heart Parish. Again, Turf Lodge, loved it, absolutely. I've been blessed. I've never been in a parish that I wasn't happy in, and it's to do with the people. Now, the only place I wasn't happy in was Lisburn. And that was not because of the people, but because it was Donaghy's hometown.
Yeah, we're going to touch on that. I see you posting a lot of stuff about Donaghy's his name. He's still alive, is he, Father?
Yeah, he's still alive. And it's all in the public domain. He got 10 years in jail for what he did to me and two other kids.
They came forward, did they?
They came forward in 2009. The trial started in mid-November 2000. He was arrested in 2010 and charged. He denied everything, of course. And then 2011... November the 14th, the trial began with a judge presiding over it, obviously, and a jury. We had to give evidence because he was denying everything, you know. I was up first, and I tell you one thing, it was awful. It was absolutely awful.
I'm sure it was handled that.
It was my mummy had died 2 years previously, and this trial and being cross-examined and given evidence was far worse than the experience of losing my mother. Because I had to talk about stuff that he had done that I had never talked to anybody except a therapist about. Not even my closest friends. And I had to go into the details of what he had done, as did the other lads. They had to go in through the same ordeal.
I mean, you're having to relive it.
Oh, it was terrible. Yeah. I was physically sick. I mean, literally. I was, you know, thrown up in the street. I had nothing to bring up because I hadn't been eating anything, but it was awful and with nerves. And
did this go on for
a couple of weeks, month.
Did it?
It went on for a month, yeah. And there was me and two other victims. And then he was found guilty on the 14th of December, 2011. He was remanded in custody to get sent.
Hiring isn't just about finding someone willing to take the job. You need the right person with the right background who can move your business forward. If you want candidates who truly match what you're looking for, trust Indeed Sponsored Jobs. With Indeed Sponsored Jobs, your post stands out to quality candidates who actually fit the role. According to Indeed data, 90% are more likely to be hired and trusted by 1.6 million companies. Spend more time interviewing candidates who check all your boxes. Less stress, less time, more results. Now with Indeed Sponsored Jobs. And listeners of this show will get a $75 sponsored job credit to help your job get the premium status it deserves at Indeed.com/podcast13. Just go to Indeed.com/podcast13 right now and support our show by saying you heard about Indeed on this podcast. Indeed.com/podcast13. Terms and conditions apply. Hiring? Do it the right way with Indeed.
Sentenced in the new year. So on the 10th of February 2012, he was sentenced to 10 years in jail.
And how many did he serve?
He served 5.5.
That's a fucking joke. He should be doing life. He should be doing life. He's a horrible, horrible person.
Oh, yeah. I mean, he was here. He was in our parish here.
Was he?
Yep.
No, how old would he be, Father?
Oh, he's in his late 60s somewhere.
See, being obviously you're a man of God.
Yeah.
And you're meant to be a man for forgiveness. You couldn't forgive what he done. Well, like, so this is a weird question for you.
Have to forgive because what he's done,
do you know what I mean?
Like, that's a very important question. That's really, an awful lot of people think, you know, to forgive. So I do forgive him. I do. But a lot of people think, oh, you forgive him. You shouldn't be angry anymore with him. You know, you shouldn't, you know, want him brought to justice for the evil things that he's done to other people. You know what I mean? That's not forgiveness.
But listen, he's still alive. He could be doing it again. He's don't know.
He's monitored. He's on the sex offenders register for life.
But Father, and people are crafty people.
Oh, they are?
I don't never trust anyone like
this
that.
This man threatened to kill a 14-year-old boy if he told anybody what he had done to him.
How old were you?
I was 18 when he started grooming me. I was 20 when he pounced. When I was 20, I looked about 14.
I seen photos of you. You had the curtains and all. My
20s, people still thought I was in my teens. And I had the physical appearance of a young teenage boy and the build. I was a skinny runt, you know.
Yeah.
He was a big man compared to me, and I hadn't. And he would get you on your own, and he would use force and violence and to overpower you and to do what he wanted to you.
If you were to say no, he would use his authority.
And he would come down to our house. It happened when I was home from seminary, and when I would be on my holidays, you know, like Christmas and Easter and summer, and he would just come down to our house and he would come in and just take over. He would even be ignorant to my father in our own house. My dad couldn't stand him. I didn't know that until many, many years later when I had to tell my mother and father what I had been dealing with. See, I was first abused at the age of 4 and 6.
Were you?
Yeah, I had already been abused as a child, as a 4-year-old, 5-year-old, 6-year-old. And
was that by an old priest?
No, nothing to do with it, nothing to do with the church, no. The first one was a babysitter. And the second abuser was like a local guy in Rathcoole.
You can remember it?
Oh, yeah.
Are you from Rathcoole?
I grew up and started in Rathcoole, but we got put out in the early 70s. My dad was threatened if we didn't get out, they would burn us out that night. So that was the end of that. We had to get out. And I was about 7 or 8. We didn't understand what was happening. I had a baby brother who was only a few weeks old at the time, you know. And my dad was worried because he was only literally home from the hospital with my mother. And he was a babe in arms. Like, he was only a couple of weeks old. And my dad wasn't going to take any chances, obviously, once they said that, because it was a very, very dangerous place, Rathcoole, you know.
Surely back in the days as well.
Yeah. I mean, there was good people there too, the very good people there as well. But there was the very, one of my memories, I was about 7 or so, my dad had us all in the room with him and my mother. It was dangerous, and he had a hatchet beside the bed, you know, and I remember peeping out the curtains with him. It was in the middle of the night, and I can still see this vividly. All these masked men, combat uniforms, and we have Ulster flags and Union Jacks cudgels. Oh, I can still hear their feet marching. Yeah. They were wearing them hobnail boots, and they're all marching. And I can still see them, and I can still hear them. And I knew my dad was.
That would be like loyalists or paramilitaries.
Loyalists, UDA, UVF, whoever. Yeah. You know, because down at the bottom of our street there was a UDA club. That's the Alpha. They used to call it the Alpha. It was a cinema, but they were in it. They were using it as a kind of a den,
HQ,
you know,
HQ of
sort of thing. Yeah,
that sort of hang went on both sides, but the two
it did, of course. Yeah. Oh, of course, it did. You know,
I feel like, see, in terms of like abuse, you would like suffer as a child. I feel like in them days, you would have got away. A lot of people got away with a lot more as well. Even I would watch some documentaries on Netflix about like stuff like real life true crime documentaries, and it's more or less all back in the day, same kind of story, same kind of similar stories, where people that have got away with. But if this had happened nowadays, they wouldn't have gotten away with it.
No way, you know, because we're much more aware. I'll give you an example. I remember one of my memories. This guy had me behind a hedge. I was about six, and he had me face down, and he had, you know, he was doing what he was doing, and this woman came along. And I can still see her. She had a scarf on her. And the way women used to wear a scarf. And I was lying there and he had pulled my trousers and trunks down and he had me face down. And when this woman appeared, I remember looking over the hedge and he ran away and left me lying there like that. You know, and she shouted at me. I was being abused on the ground by this guy who ran away when she came on the scene, and she shouted at me and called me a dirty wee git and all this, and I didn't understand what was happening.
Yeah,
I didn't.
She's just as bad as him.
You're young at the time. You're only a kid. You don't know. You're not aware. You know what I mean?
My earliest memories are of abuse.
Seriously?
The earliest. I remember the babysitter. She would take me into the bath. It was a woman, by the way. Women abused too.
Seriously?
Yep. Yeah, a woman. She was a woman. And she would take me into the bathroom at night, getting me ready for bed, and she would play with me like a wee action man sort of thing. And, you know, and that's some of my earliest memories, you know. And then this other man came along, this guy, this, you know, who was doing that to me that particular... I could take you to the very spot where it happened.
Did they ever get caught? Did they ever get done? No.
They're probably dead, to be honest with you, I'd say.
It's probably the best place for them, to be honest.
I could take you to the very spot where that happened, where that woman came. There's a wee lane, there's a wee alleyway in Rathcoole behind the Alpha that I was talking about, and it leads into Ballyronan Park. It was there, there was a hedge growing there, and it was behind a hedge. I think the hedge is gone, but I have revisited that spot for therapeutic purposes to try. Some of my... therapy, you know, like you see them photographs I put up with me back in the day, has been actually to go back to that kid and comfort that kid. Because, and later when I was being abused by Donaghy, I tried to resist as best I could, but it was hopeless. And there's a thing called dissociation. I don't know if you have heard of dissociating.
Yeah, when something's happening to you, like traumatic, you use your brain, your mind dissociates
literally.
Somewhere else.
And you know, your brain doesn't stop developing until your late 20s.
Yeah.
You know, it doesn't stop developing until your late 20s. And so I was still in very many ways like a young lad, a young adult. I was.
You were,
you know,
all right.
Yeah. And I looked a lot younger even than I was. And, you know, I hadn't the physical strength. I did try. I became like a clenched fist when he would come at me, you know, but he would wear you down, he would exhaust you. And I would step out of the room. I remember, like, I was looking down on myself and I could see him, and I was face down and I couldn't breathe.
Out of the body experience, exactly.
And I could see him humping me like a piece of meat, and I was suffocating and trying to breathe. And I could see my face trying to breathe, and him doing what he was doing. I was like almost hovering over the scene. And I sort of, the way I could only cope with it was, is to, when it was over, to say, that didn't happen. That did not happen. And I would say,
that's probably what he wanted to hear. He probably
to myself,
wanted,
I said that.
Oh, did you? All right.
Oh, yeah, to me. Yeah, I said to Paddy, that did not happen there. You can't, you'll be destroyed if you let your mind go there. And I would have been then. And the only way I went on for 3 years. And it stopped eventually because he lost interest and he went on to somebody else, you know. I got free of his grip. It was actually a very good friend of mine. I had said to him, I was in Maynooth at the time studying for the priesthood. My best friend, he's still my best friend, was with me one day. And this Donaghy rang to say he was coming down to Maynooth. Not can I come down or whatever. He just, I'm coming down. And it was like, you know, he just did what he wanted. He just thought he could do what he wanted. And
I,
yeah.
Well, what is his name? Donaghy? What?
Jim
Donaghy.
Donaghy.
We'll put a picture up of him to let everyone get a wee look at him.
If you Google him, you'll get him, you know.
Yeah, I can understand like the hurt you must feel too, because you're trying to do good into the world and do nothing but good. And then like your kindness and your niceness is being sort of taken for granted and taken for like a weakness. People like that prey on the weak, you know what I mean?
Well, I was a very good kid, you know, and trusting, as many kids are, you know. And I just couldn't believe it was happening to me. I just could not believe this. But anyway, how it stopped was, I said to my friend that he's coming, that this priest. I didn't say why, but I said, I don't like him and I'm afraid of him. And my friend, we arranged that he would come on the scene at a given time. We had it all set up, just as if he came up by chance. And I was at the gates of Maynooth College. my friend was watching from a distance and he saw me with your man and he came over as if, you know, and I said, oh, this is my friend. And Donaghy went to shake his hand and my friend wouldn't shake his hand. He just eyeballed him and he got very jittery and jumpy and he made an excuse and he just left. He said, I have to be back in Belfast for something I've forgotten about, and he just left. And I never had ever any other trouble after that.
He's
he never came
on,
near
he's
me.
Getting caught, didn't he?
He went on to abuse others, you know.
But to help your friend that day, you know what I mean?
I escaped. Yeah. I escaped and he never bothered me again and I never had any more dealings with him, you know. He abused a 7-year-old boy as well. He pleaded guilty to that after he was found guilty.
He served 5 years for it?
Like, he served 5.5 years and he was given a 2-year sentence to run concurrently with the 10 years that he was supposed to be serving. So you may say that he didn't even serve anything for that child.
Like,
you know,
the justice system's a bit up the left, to be honest. Totally. Because there's people that commit these type of crimes, like sexual crimes, that seem that don't ever do any real jail time.
And
people
often
may get caught with a bit of marijuana or something.
I know.
Do 3 years or something. It's not right.
You read it all the time, you know, some pervert has been caught and they get a suspended sentence or something, you know.
These people shouldn't be allowed in the
They're
public.
Dangerous.
They shouldn't be.
They're dangerous people and they destroy lives. I mean, I'm lucky, and not lucky, I'm blessed, or don't like the word lucky. I almost didn't survive. I could have been totally destroyed.
Do you mean suicidal? Do you mean...
Oh, yeah.
And I'm sure it'd be hard feeling like that, especially being a priest.
Yes,
because
yes.
That's going against all the, your
totally.
Beliefs.
Because I'm supposed to give people hope. But as I... Okay, he left me alone and never bothered me again. But I had gone on for 3 years and the damage was done. And I was the walking wounded. And it was getting worse and worse and worse as the years went on. I was suffering from depression and anxiety. I was having panic attacks. I was having nightmares. I was cutting myself. I couldn't eat properly. I couldn't sleep properly. It was horrendous. And then you're dealing as a priest with other really, you know, difficult situations and awful things, you know.
I'm trying to help other people get through stuff when really you're not even really coping with
it. I remember visiting somebody in a psychiatric hospital one time and the person had an eating disorder and I had an eating disorder as well. I felt like saying to the nurse, have you another bed? I felt I felt you should be in hospital. It was horrible. It was awful. I don't know how I got through it.
How are you now, father? Are you?
I have still my struggles. I mean, in the last 2.5 years, you see, I'd blocked it all out, you know, the horror of it. That's the only way I could cope. But about 2.5 years ago, I think I was finally strong enough to face, this is what he did to you. I couldn't even use the word rape. Now I can. That's what it was. Yeah. It was rape.
It takes a lot for someone to, as well. It
and
takes
like,
a lot of strength.
Especially
and
men.
Yeah,
especially
yes.
males.
But see, you doing that and coming out and like admitting that and letting people know, it will help people other people come forward.
It has. I mean,
breaking the cycle, because the abuse is sort of goes into cycles. And then it gets repeated and repeated.
It does.
Whereas you're taking another step to break the cycle and show people and what actually is going on and trying to do something about it. You know what I mean?
Exactly. You're spot on. And it is breaking the cycle. And it's an awful thing to say. I wish it had never happened to me. It shouldn't have happened to me. But the fact that it did happen to me, and this is God brought good out of it.
Yeah.
Because the amount of people over the years that I have given help and courage to break theirs. It's about breaking the silence, breaking your silence. And even if you just tell your best friend or your wife or your husband or your girlfriend or your boyfriend, or if you just break that silence, that's a massive step. And it's the big first step towards healing. My best friend that I was talking about there, he was the first person that I told about being abused as a child and then as a young adult. That was the beginning of me, you know, breaking the silence. And as
hiring isn't just about finding someone willing to take the job. You need the right person with the right background who can move your business forward. If you want candidates who truly match what you're looking for, trust Indeed Sponsored Jobs. With Indeed Sponsored Jobs, your post stands out to quality candidates who actually fit the role. According to Indeed data, 90% are more likely to be hired and trusted by 1.6 million companies. Spend more time interviewing candidates who check all your boxes. Less stress, less time, more results. Now with Indeed Sponsored Jobs. And listeners of this show will get a $75 sponsored job credit to help your job get the premium status it deserves at Indeed.com/podcast13. Just go to Indeed.com/podcast13 right now and support our show by saying you heard about Indeed on this podcast. Indeed.com/podcast13. Terms and conditions apply. Hiring? Do it the right way with Indeed.
I got stronger and stronger and stronger. But I took a nervous breakdown in 2003, and the doctor put me off 3 months sick leave, and I had to go get help and therapy and everything like that. The diocese here allowed me to go to America, and they had to pay for it. Obviously, of course, they had to pay for it because it was caused
by them,
by their system, and a priest in their system. So they owed it to me because I could never have afforded anything like that. But that did help enormously.
Can I ask a wee quick question? Yeah. See, in the priesthood, like, do you get paid to be a priest?
Yeah, we
do you get a salary. Or
yeah,
what
you get.
Way does
yeah, you get. You get a monthly stipend. It's called. Mine is about 1,650 a month.
Is that what you get?
That's all right.
But you have to live.
It's not all right.
Well, it's not.
No, it isn't. It's not in today's age.
No, but it's. But I can get by on it.
I was just
you get your bread and milk out of your father, and that's about it.
You have to pay your car out of it. My car is about £330 a month because I'll never own that car. That belongs to Charles Hurst. I just rent it off them once for a month. And then they change it every 3 years for you. You don't have to worry about MOTs or anything like that.
Is this like a priest thing?
No, it's like for everybody, you know.
I have to say, you're the coolest looking priest I've seen, like, rocking in with a wee cap on the North Face and the jeans, like, I have to say.
Yeah.
I haven't seen much priest now.
I like the labels.
You've got the style, you know what I mean?
You have to feed yourself out of that, pay your mobile out of that and stuff. But I manage okay, you know. It's not a fortune. It's almost the minimum wage, I think, when you add it all up for 12 months. But it's okay. People used to think priests have money. And some priests do because they come from wealthy backgrounds.
Yeah.
But I came from a working class family. You know, my dad worked in a meat factory in the old... It used to be down in White Abbey. It was a slaughterhouse, really. And, you know, they'd kill the animals. And my dad used to drop the big heavy sides of beef. And that was his job. He sort of butchered as well, you know. And my mother was a cleaner. Schools and... like the University of Ulster in Jordanstown, she cleaned at night in there to make the few extra bob. Like, we never had much.
So, Father, you're not really selling it to anyone looking to be a priest here? Like,
well, do you know what? I wouldn't swap it for the world. I highly recommend it. I love being a priest.
You have to give a lot. You have to give your whole life up. Like,
you do.
You're giving up a wife.
And
you're giving up kids.
You're doing
it's
all
a lot
that.
Of things. And fair play to you, because there's not many of us out there. And without the priest, there's no chapel.
Yeah, that's right.
I think a lot more people would be priests if you're allowed to have kids and a wife.
Protestant priests can't they? Or is that they?
They can, but they're still not getting ministers. There's still
a minister,
shortage. Yeah, and there's been shortages of priests before in history, you know, so...
It's
I wouldn't. God will take care of it. Yeah. God will take care of it in his own way. And we have to go on with hope and do the best we can. You know, we're thinner on the ground than we were, definitely. And we are feeling that a wee bit because the workload doesn't get any less. The same amount of people die.
Yeah, 100%.
You know,
and then Christians.
For example,
communions.
I'm the only priest here now. There used to be 3 priests in Corpus Christi, you know. And there's only me now. And there's still the same amount of baptisms, the same amount of... Oh, well, that might be the same amount of weddings, no.
How many baptisms do you reckon you've done in your whole span? Like
thousands and thousands.
And christenings and stuff.
So you christened my lad?
Yeah, so I did. We do baptisms about the second and fourth Sunday of every month. And there's usually 5 or 6 babies to be baptised, usually, you know. But over the years, like when I started off in Poleglass, I was baptising maybe 13, 14 kids on a Sunday, you know. That would, who knows, I could add all that up. Need to go back through all the registers, you know.
Maybe start a job money babies or something. You're trying to
wipe the daddy holds them, or the mummy. No, mummy or daddy holds them. But you're right, because, you know, they do ask you,
like,
Father, would you like to hold the child and get your photo? And you wouldn't like to say no, but you're nervous because they're delicate wee things, babies, you know, and you know, you do. But I'm sort of getting the hang of it a bit more, you know.
Father, a silly question here, but see the wine you drink. Is that real wine?
Oh, it is, yeah.
Like alcohol? And,
oh, absolutely. It's about 16%. It's like a sherry. But you only drink a wee mouthful, you know? It's not...
Well, depends. There might be a few alcohol priests out there.
No, at Mass, well, there are.
Priests are allowed to drink alcohol? You're allowed to have
a
beer? You're allowed to have a pint and all that?
Oh, yeah, absolutely.
I know it's only a film, like, but I was watching it. It was a scary film, it's only out there. The priest in it was an alcoholic.
Yeah.
He was just drinking them all the wine and the dessert sort of thing.
Yeah,
so
yeah.
That's where it came from.
But this wine, it's not great wine. You wouldn't want to drink it.
Is it holy wine? Like, is it?
No, it is at Mass. Once it's consecrated, it's the precious blood of Jesus, you know. And when you're drinking it, you're not thinking about wine. It's not wine anymore. It tastes like wine. It smells like wine, but it's no longer. Our faith tells us this now, the precious blood and the host is the body of Christ. Jesus is really present. And so you're concentrating. You're not thinking this Mrs. Wayne. You're thinking about him. You're receiving him into your heart, into your soul, you know. It's, yes, but it's wine. It's made from grapes. It's fermented. And it's about maybe 16% volume.
Have you ever felt a wee bit tipsy or anything, Nick?
At mass? No. You only drink in a mouthful.
At what point, going through school, did you go, right, everyone else is going, doing whatever they're doing, I want to be a priest? Well, how did
probably
that...
Probably in P4.
P4 that early on, you knew?
Yeah, I knew. I was fascinated with mass and what the priest was doing on the altar. And my dad used to have to lift me up on his shoulder so I could see everything. Because I was only small, obviously. And all the people, like, you couldn't see over their heads in the church when they were all standing and stuff like that. So my dad would lift me up so I could see what was happening. And it was a beautiful church as well. It was down in White House, down the Shore Road. You can see it from the motorway if you're heading down towards Carrickfergus. It has a big spire. And my mummy and daddy were both buried out of that church, you know.
Sorry, your dad just recently
died in February, yeah.
Sorry to hear, Father. Tell us this, so you wouldn't do your own family members' funerals?
I did my mummy's funeral.
Is that an honour to do that? Like,
sure. You wouldn't want anybody else
100%,
to do it.
100%.
I suppose, that,
yeah.
That's true.
Yeah.
But never really thought about that.
Neither did I.
And I was, you know, more agitated about my daddy's funeral than my mother's. To be honest, my mother's dead now 15 years. And my daddy had been dying since this time last year. Around this time, the 10th of November, they put the driver in, morphine, ingrown tumour in his head, you know, and his pain was very difficult to manage. And they put the driver in about the 10th of November last year, and he didn't die until the 22nd of February. It was horrendous, you know.
Because you just see him suffering,
yeah,
really.
It was awful and very, very draining, because we didn't know how long it was going to go on, you know. And finally, then he went unconscious on a Wednesday, and then he died the following Thursday, just about a week and a day later. And I was actually about to do a funeral down in Corpus Christi when my sister rang me to say, "My daddy's gone." And the funeral, that was at 20 past 12. I had a funeral at 12:30. I had to just literally push that out. You can't go there at the minute. You have to focus on this funeral.
Did you have
people.
To do that, did
yeah,
you?
I did.
For a penny, I'm sure that's harsh. It's not like you can ring in sick.
No.
I'm in work, I can go here and then get someone else to cover. It's not like there's another priest just waiting.
There's not, no. And I did it, and I was okay.
For a penny,
well, I wasn't okay, but I did it. And Sister Kathleen, we have a sister in the parish who helps me, and she's brilliant. And she did the prayers at the grave then for me, so I could go straight over. My dad was still warm. God love him when I got there, you know. But it was the end. It was a blessed release for him. It really was, you know.
And how are you now, Father?
Well, I'm, you know, a lot better. As I said, 2.5 years ago, all exploded in my head about what I'd been through, and the full reality of it hit me. But I think because I was now strong enough to deal with it.
I feel like you're one of the most mentally strong people I've spoken to in my life, to be honest with you, for all the stuff that you've been through so far. Like,
yeah,
it takes a lot. Like,
I don't always feel mentally strong.
I'm sure you don't, but for us, on the outside looking in...
But I think it's very important. I'm very open about my mental health, and I think it's very important in our community. For men, for everybody, but
especially men have that thing that we're not allowed to open up, that we can't speak, and it's you're sort of like, it's not manly to speak up about these things.
And
I felt like that too. Like we all have.
That's why I chose, you know, to actually be very open and to talk about it in social media and stuff like that, to give others permission to talk and to be open themselves, and there's no, and to remove the stigma, because there is a stigma about your mental health, and there's too many people who just, you know, God love them, they look, because as I was mentioning earlier, I did suffer from suicidal ideation and stuff like that over the years, and there was days I said to just go and jump off the Cave Hill or crash your car at speed into a tree or something, because this is too painful for you to cope with. And you know, I wanted it to be over. I wanted the pain to be over more than anything else, and it wasn't going away. It was getting worse and worse and worse. And as I said, I was dealing with tragic situations of suicide and things like that. And like, I remember getting called one time to a lad, and he had took his own life, and he'd cut himself. And I thought to myself, oh my God, that could be you. Because I was cutting myself at that time,
that's,
you know.
That's a bad crack.
And because I know why I was doing it now, you know. It was to externalize the pain you were feeling inside. You wanted something to, like, that cut was something you could look at and actually say, well, that's causing pain there. So, you know, whereas the other stuff was all in here and you
couldn't.
So
you, by cutting your wrist, it was taking pain away from your,
the
mantle. Yeah,
from
your head,
exactly.
Really?
It's sort
I've
of like
thought,
a releasing,
never thought of
like releasing a pressure valve or something. That's what it felt like, you know. And
I feel like from you coming on the day and sort of speaking to us too, a lot of people's narratives will change on, like, how they look at priests, especially for myself, because I didn't go to your parish, so today's my first time meeting you, but just the way I sort of had a, not a stereotype, but kind of like a stereotype in my head of priests, you've definitely changed my outlook on them as well, and very mentally strong. It takes a lot to come out and speak about stuff like this as well, and just appreciate you coming and letting the people know your story.
Delighted to be here with you, and you know, following the footsteps of the legend Joanie.
Joan, did you watch her wee podcast? Oh, I love Joanie.
Yeah. She is a great woman. She is a legend. I love her too. And, you know, she's
not a bit behind the door. She just says it
and she sees it.
I know. That's what I love about her. She gets away with her too. She does.
Of course, Joanie get away with anything.
Joanie's she's some amount of followers on TikTok. Are you on TikTok, Father?
Not TikTok, but I'm on like Facebook and Instagram and stuff like that. I don't really use Instagram very much.
You're very popular on Facebook too, so you are.
You must get you on the Facebook.
Yeah.
It's good to hear you're out doing a bit of boxing and doing a bit of training. Yeah. I've never seen any priest do that too. You know what I mean? You're sort of changing the narrative. Like,
When I was a kid, my dad had me boxing. I wish I had kept it up, but I think it was part of being traumatized as a child that I had no confidence.
Yeah.
And I was afraid all the time. I was a very nervous kid, you know. And I remember fighting one time. This up in Ligonil, there used to be a box, not sure if there still is, a boxing club in Ligonil. And I was fighting, and all I could hear was...
Have you had a fight and have you fought now, have you?
Yeah, and all the screaming, and everybody was screaming. And I was panicking as a kid, you know. But I wish I boxed in other ways, if you know what I mean.
Yeah, and roll with the punches.
Then about 2021... I had to do something about my health because I was massively overweight. John, do you remember?
Yeah, no, I can remember. You've lost.
About 9 stone.
Nine? You do look brilliant. Yeah. Were you depressed?
No, it was an antidepressant that I was put on. It wasn't even that. It was an antipsychotic drug. And after Donaghy was put in jail, I plummeted into like a very dark place. I thought, you've got justice, you'll be good, you'll be fine. But it wasn't. It floored me. And I was put on this drug and... Part of the side effects is weight gain because it slows your metabolism away down.
Yeah.
And I've been told subsequently you should never have been on that in the first place. You didn't need that. You weren't psychotic. You were just depressed. And I had been on antidepressants since my 20s anyway because of what Donaghy had done to me, you know. But I was fit, active, even on antidepressants then. I was very, very fit and, you know, running and walking and all that stuff, you know. And so, as I said, 2021, I had to go to the doctors, and my blood pressure was so high they were going to send me to the Royal, and it came down a wee bit, and they says, right, you're immediately going on this medication. And I had to go to the chemist down in the Springfield Road, McGettigan's chemist, because my doctor's down there.
So is mine.
Springfield Road surgery.
Cummins? No, I'm at the...
There's two. Anyway, I was going into the chemist, and I was... get the prescription, and I saw a reflection of myself in the glass, and I said, that's not you. How did you end up like this? That's definitely, you're never like this. I was always very thin and fit. I said, you're going to have to do something about
this. What were you at your heaviest?
I think it was about 18 stone or something.
Was that the moment?
Hiring isn't just about finding someone willing to take the job. You need the right person with the right background who can move your business forward. If you want candidates who truly match what you're looking for, trust Indeed Sponsored Jobs. With Indeed Sponsored Jobs, your post stands out to quality candidates who actually fit the role. According to Indeed data, 90% are more likely to be hired and trusted by 1.6 million companies. Spend more time interviewing candidates who check all your boxes. Less stress, less time, more results. Now with Indeed Sponsored Jobs. And listeners of this show will get a $75 sponsored job credit to help your job get the premium status it deserves at Indeed.com/podcast13. Just go to Indeed.com/podcast13 right now and support our show by saying you heard about Indeed on this podcast. Indeed.com/podcast13. Terms and conditions apply. Hiring? Do it the right way with Indeed.
When you seen yourself, it was the trigger point.
And as if a wee whisper in my ear said, you're going to change this, and you're starting today and not tomorrow, and you're going to do this, you're going to do this. And I did. I had a treadmill in my bedroom that was a clothes horse.
And gathering dust.
Yeah. And I said, you're getting on that treadmill today. And I could hardly walk because I was down with pains in my knee and I could hardly walk. I mean, there was days I couldn't say mass standing up. I had to sit down to say mass. John, do you remember that?
Yeah. He's
saying a lot of people now as well, the way you were speaking about like antidepressants and stuff. I know a lot of people that have been sort of taking them for years and now they've sort of dabbled in the mushrooms, mushroom extracts, like microdosing.
I've heard of that,
right? Okay.
And it would have like, say like lansmane, it's like an extract from a type of mushroom, but it helps people deal with like depression and anxiety, and it's supposed to be like another alternative, but a cleaner and better alternative without the bad side effects that sort of antidepressants would give you.
Okay.
It's grows from the ground.
Yeah, it grows from your earth. Must look
that up.
Definitely. Yeah. If I get you on the Facebook, I'll send you a link.
Yeah.
You'll not be doing mass on Sunday and everything will be
cool. No, it's not psychedelic. It's literally just for
Microdosing, it's a thing.
But a few people close to me as well have started to do it, and I've actually noticed personally the difference in their personality and how they've acted, and they seem a lot happier.
Sounds really worth looking at.
I swear to God, I would definitely recommend it. Just even to try, you never know.
In the last like maybe 6 months, I've had to go back on anti-anxiety and antidepressant medication, you know.
Yeah.
And now they're not, I don't even know if they're making any difference. I mean, I'm okay at the minute, I'm grand. I mean, I've had a few.
You seem in good spirits. Yeah.
Do you sleep well, Father?
I am back to sleeping again, but a few weeks ago there was 5 nights that I never slept
in a row. Jesus Christ,
it was awful. And see, when you feel like you're going mad.
You would really go mad.
I suffer from complex post-traumatic stress disorder, diagnosed with that just after Donaghy's trial. The doctor was appointed by the police for the victim impact report that they do in the court when he was being sentenced, and I ticked every box for PTSD, you know.
Fuck, of course you would after that. Father, say I seen this fella and I'm not saying I'm going to, but say I heard him, what way would you feel like that? What way would you feel about that?
I wouldn't want you to. I really wouldn't. No, I wouldn't want you to. See, I should go back to what I said there earlier about forgiveness. I do forgive him. I don't wish him any harm. That's what forgiveness means. You don't
but
wish.
Are you saying this because you have to say it? Are you genuinely believe it?
Now, do I like him?
Of course
am
not.
Am I angry with him? I don't like him, and I am angry with him. He was horrible. He was awful, dangerous, violent, sadistic, pervert.
100%,
that's the truth about him. That's the truth about him.
People deserve
to know. But do I want him killed or lynched or whatever? No, I don't think.
Karma gets people in the end, doesn't it?
Well, he'll stand before God. And if he doesn't repent, that's not going
to
be good.
Part of these things, like, see a priest, like, if he can devote his whole life to God, how can he do like one of the biggest sins you could ever do? How can you go from such a high end of the scale, believing in the worshipping God, and then going and doing something so bad?
To be honest with you, it's a bit psychotic. Like,
he raped me the night before he was ordained.
What's that mean?
When he was ordained a priest.
Was that mean given like his priest?
When the bishop put his hands on his head, then the night before that, he had raped me in a flat in Lisburn where he got me on my own, and he deliberately planned it because I was there. I was doing the music. I was playing the music for his ordination with a choir. A lot of seminarians were up from down south and all going to his ordination, and they were staying with different families for the night or a couple of nights, whatever it was. And I presumed that I would be doing the same. But no, I says to him about, it was getting late, probably about 10:30 at night. And I says to him, where am I staying? Oh, you're staying with me, he said. And I knew wasn't going to be good. And by God, it was awful. And he took me to this flat. And I didn't know Lisburn. My dad didn't drive. Like, anywhere I went was on a bus or walking, you know. He took me to this flat. And a night of terror is the only way I can describe it, you know. And then the next day, I was looking down from the choir loft. And there he was. The priest at his ordination lies prostrate on the ground as a sign of him giving himself totally to God. And all I could think of was what he had done the night before.
He's basically the devil, isn't he? Like,
yeah, he was. He was. He was a monster. He really was.
Horrible bastard. That's what he was like.
He was a monster, but
I feel like this stuff, like what you're saying, like people in the church, it sort of puts people off going to mass and like being faithful to God.
It has done
people
awful damage.
Roads,
yes.
Doing stuff like that.
It has caused immense harm to the church.
There's a lot of going on back in. There's a lot of priests have done that, haven't, like in the Catholic. Or
no,
is
no,
that
it's a small percentage? Believe it or not,
is that right?
The way you, but it doesn't matter that it's a small percentage. That small percentage has caused colossal harm.
Yeah, 100%
for the big percentage.
Yeah, and the majority of priests wouldn't hurt anybody and are doing what they should do, and they're being faithful to God. But this small number were poison, and they poisoned everything for everybody. You know, like. And I just couldn't get my head around the fact that he was just being ordained a priest, and the night before, what he had done to me by force.
That's way, that's way.
You know? And somebody told me a girl was in the choir. She was only a young girl at the time, but I know her now today. And, you know, she told me, you know, the day of that, his ordination ceremony, you were fine the day before. You were dead on at the rehearsal. But when you come into the choir loft that next day, afternoon it was, 3 o'clock, the ceremony started at 3 o'clock, you did not look well. You were an awful pale colour.
She obviously didn't know.
No, she didn't know, but
Father, why did you never go and speak to like an adult? Or
you were afraid.
Were you?
And too ashamed.
Yeah,
shame and fear.
Yeah.
Kind of in your own head a bit too much maybe as yeah. well. Because it's been going on in your mind, you don't, yeah. you're scared to speak.
And another question people ask me, how did you go on to be a priest after what he did to you? The answer to that is very simple. I knew God. I knew him from I was a very young child. And I also knew good priests since I was a young child. So it's as simple as that. I felt called by God to be a priest since I was very young. And he could have destroyed that. He could have, absolutely. You know, like he, you know, I got kicked out
of the
seminary in my fourth year. Because I knew what he was doing to me wasn't right and wasn't normal. And I was trying to, what would you say? I started going to discos, friends in White Abbey when I was home. And I started courting girls and things like that.
Have you ever had a girlfriend, Father?
No, I never had a girlfriend, no. But I was courting girls and to try and be normal. And we weren't allowed to do that. Like, you're preparing for a life of celibacy. You're not, we weren't supposed to do anything like that. But I was doing it to try and normalize my life and feel normal. You know, it was just horrible what he was doing. And it made me sick, so sick what he was doing, you know. But I got reported for going out with girls and all and drinking. And I was innocent enough now, I can assure you. And it wasn't much. It was maybe a pint.
And you're still young.
I was only... young lad, it
you
was
still
only...
have these lessons to learn as you're going to get older, you know.
Yeah,
I mean?
This is the thing people do think, and I think of it, it's like a stereotype. A priest should just have no life, but they shouldn't. They should have. They should have like you do.
Yeah.
But people do think, oh, that once they are at a mass, they just have to go and sit in the house and wait on their next.
And pray all day.
You've loads of things to do apart from mass and prayer. You have, that's very important. That's the center of your life. But you have lots of other things to do as well. You have the sick to look after. You have people grieving to look after, and a whole load of stuff.
I'm sure it's hard. Have you ever had to give anybody like their last rites?
Lots of times. Sure,
that must be horrible.
And I remember they kicked me out for a year, and they told me I was immature and that all this, you know. But I was far more, it was the bishop at the time, go and prove to me that you're a man. And I was more of a man then than he ever was in his whole life, you know. Okay, I got a job and stock and shelves and Marks and Spencers and whatever. And then they took me back then after the year, and I was allowed to continue. But it's just as easily, but not allowed to continue. And that would have been my life ruined.
I wonder who reported you.
I think I know who reported.
Yeah.
Well, thank God you did. You did get back into it, and because like, you're very respected man about here, so everyone looks up to you in this community.
I love the people here. I've loved everywhere I've been. You know, even like Lisburn wasn't the people that were the problem. It was the location. It was being triggered constantly. Being there, it's his hometown. I only lasted 4 months, and then I took a nervous breakdown, you know, and the doctor put me off sick, as I told you earlier there, you know. And but it was, I couldn't believe that I'd just been sent to Lisburn, because I had reported by this stage, because I was worried about another young lad, and I had reported it, but it was just ignored. And the bishop that we had at the time, he sent me there, I believe, deliberately.
He knew,
because I was speaking out against child abuse, and they didn't like it.
Yeah.
They did not like it one bit. And I think he sent me there to try and, you know.
So you would struggle
yeah,
to pick
yeah.
you in that
Father,
but it backfired you? Spectacularly on me.
Father, heck of the many people you've saved by speaking out. Because he would have yeah. continued.
He would have. Of course
worried.
He would have, yeah.
These people don't. That wouldn't be enough for him.
No, it
he,
wouldn't.
These people are predators. And
they are. I firmly believe there's other victims of his
100%, out there. 100%. I believe that too.
Definitely. Because the therapist I worked with in America said, he was brilliant. He said, where there's one, there's two. And where there's two, there's more, you know. And with him, there is more. I'm yeah. certain of it. Yeah.
Well, Father, we're just touching the arm, aren't we? Usually wrap up about now. So,
how many people that you have inspired and
it's
sort of
it's
get,
my
get
privilege.
Hope as well.
It's my privilege
because you have all right. Even me, who's only met you today, I'm sort yeah. of looking at you as a bit of an inspiration now. And I wouldn't have really looked at much priest like that, but
sure.
you've definitely
yeah.
changed my perspective, and I appreciate you.
Well, we believe that God can bring good out of evil. Even
yeah.
and evil is real, but God can bring good out of it. And I believe that the evil that happened to me, God used it eventually for a good purpose to help other people and literally has saved lives.
That's
yeah.
a good way
literally,
of looking at it, Father.
Really.
Can I just say, if anyone hearing any bangs, it wasn't no one was getting shads. We're recording.
It's, no, it's Halloween.
It's Halloween night and
yeah.
the kids are just starting to trick or treat
Halloween.
Here and the fireworks
yeah.
are going off in case anyone's thinking that there's someone getting kneecapped outside.
I know.
But Father, thank
know.
You for coming up. But,
thanks,
I really appreciate that.
Yes, come back to Mass. I love yous all, and I'm privileged to be the parish priest in Corpus Christi and Ballymurphy and this whole area, New Barnsley, Moyard, Spring Hill, everywhere, West Rock. I love this place, and I've loved all the parishes I've been in. So sending my love to Poleglass, Nativity, Holy Trinity, Turf Lodge, Sacred Heart in the Old Park, Lisburn, people, to the
and
people.
And the podcast.
And the podcast, yes. And Crossgar. Tarconnet and Killyleagh and all the places that I've been blessed to be in, and yous have done me so I, you know, I don't think I would have got through without the people. Priests sometimes weren't very nice to me. That's their problem. I have a lot of support as well among priests, but the people were always the mainstay for me.
Well, we love you,
part of the
Thank
people.
You,
John,
can I
thanks.
Ask just before we do wrap up, where did you get your cap, Father? I think it's a cracker.
Oh, yeah.
I actually wrap one of you.
My friends in America, Susan and Wayne, they live in San Diego, and they sent me this.
It's a cracker cap.
Yeah.
Like, I was sort of...
Yeah.
I was
San Diego Pod. Yeah. It's
Padres. I was thinking it was something to do with Padre Pio or something.
Catholic Night. Padres, that's the name of the football team, I think, or
yeah.
baseball team in San Diego. The San Diego Padres,
uh-huh.
which means fathers, you know.
Yeah, it's a cracker cap.
And because, yeah, the whole South Coast of America was evangelized by priests from Spain, mostly, and they were... Padre is what you call a priest father in Spanish, you know. So the team is named after them.
Padres.
And my friends sent me this cap, and maybe would say a prayer for Wayne, who is having some health issues at the minute.
Yeah.
So say a wee prayer for Wayne, everybody.
Yeah.
And another wee friend of mine down south, he's a wee boy, he's only 8, and his name is Finn, and he's in danger of losing his eyesight. And pray for him and his mummy and daddy and his family. They're very worried about him.
Prayers with the Finn and the
yeah.
family.
And so I hope I haven't forgotten anybody,
yes.
but they all know.
You'll remember when you leave, Father. It's
yeah.
always
well,
the way.
I know, always the
well,
way.
Thank you for coming.
This podcast is supported by The RealReal. Meet Christine. She loves shopping. And this is the sound of fashion overload. Too many fabulous things, not enough space. So Christine started selling with The RealReal.
I've always loved collecting designer pieces. Gucci bags, Prada heels. But my style keeps evolving. Selling with The RealReal? Game changer. I earn more and they do everything.
Seriously, just drop off your items or schedule a pickup. We handle the photos, descriptions, pricing, even shipping. You just sit back and watch your items sell. Fast. To our 38 million members.
And I get peace of mind knowing I earn more selling with The RealReal than anywhere else.
Exactly. This? That's the sound of your closet working for you. The RealReal. Earn more, save time, sell fast. And right now, you can get an extra $100 site credit when you sell for the first time. Go to TheRealReal.com to get your extra $100. TheRealReal.com. That's TheRealReal.com.
Want to make a difference in your community but not sure how? Go to GoFundMe.com right now and start a GoFundMe. Seriously. Your next fundraiser doesn't have to start in a school parking lot or a church basement. You can start a GoFundMe today in just minutes. Fundraise for yourself, a friend, or family member, or an organization. All that matters is that you care about them. GoFundMe is the trusted place to fundraise for what you care about. With no pressure to hit your fundraising goal, but tons of tools to help you reach it, you can confidently start fundraising right now. Whether it's creative, local, or critical, your cause matters. And there's a reason why GoFundMe is backed by millions and chosen by fundraisers everywhere. It works, and it matters. GoFundMe helps you make a real difference. Start your GoFundMe today at GoFundMe.com. That's GoFundMe.com. G-O-F-U-N-D-M-E.com. This is a commercial message brought to you by GoFundMe.